Did you know buying, selling, fixing houses, and investing in real estate is easier than you think? All you need is help from a couple of experts who flipped hundreds of houses, seen most situations, and are here to share their knowledge with you. Welcome to the Real Estate Roundup Radio Show with Andrew Jobe and J.R. Reed from selltojr.com.
Hello, Rounders. Welcome. So glad to have you guys here with us today. Welcome to the Real Estate Roundup Radio Show. I'm your host, Andrew Jobe, joined by Mr. Reed. Mr. J.R. Reed. How are you doing, J.R.?
Doing good.
We've got another exciting guest for you guys today. This is going to blow your socks off. So we talk all the time on this show about the financing, how to find deals, how to source deals, how to fund deals. But we've got the guy in the studio with us today that can make all that happen for you. This is Matt of Longleaf Lending. He is the money guy.
Matt Weidert,
yep.
That's close. Weidert. But
Weidert?
Yeah. Got it.
So close. That's okay. He mispronounced the last guest's name as well. So.
Yeah, and I've known him for years. Both of y'all.
I got your last name, though.
It would be sad if you couldn't peg my last name.
No, you did pretty good. It's a tough one, but yeah. Hey, everybody. Matt Weidert, as mentioned, just with Longleaf Lending, and excited to be here and talk shop for a little bit.
Yeah,
cool. Well, Matt, we're really excited to have you on the show because we have borrowed tons of money from you guys in the past. I say tons of money, a few million bucks.
What about the present?
That's a good question. That's a good question.
We still have all the other. We never gave it back.
Anyways, you threw off my train of thought just with that question.
That's what I'm here for.
Putting me on the spot like that. So, could you give us like the 10-second overview of what Longleaf Lending is, what y'all do, what kind of lending y'all do, and who you cater to, that sort of thing?
Yeah, short version on Longleaf Lending. So we're private money lenders, hard money lenders, whatever you want to call us. But we make loans to real estate investors here in Texas. We're direct lenders, which means we put our own balance sheet to work. So we're not a broker where we take your money and kind of sell the deal to somebody else. And that's it. We focus on building relationships with investors.
Cool.
Awesome. I think that's so important too. Rounders, there's a lot of financing hard money out there, but what Matt was just saying is really, really important is they're relationship based. So there's a lot of people out there that are brokers sourcing money. Matt's a relationship guy. When you go work with Matt, you're borrowing his money. He's getting involved in your project. So it's nice to have that type of relationship when it comes to, you know, a financing partner.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, we have some skin in the game, and it's important for us to see your success. Those are win-win scenarios that we like, and we're invested in building those relationships, and hope we can do a bunch of deals with the customers that we work with.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, man, I feel like a lot of people get into real estate the lending side of real estate as like the back half of their, or like the back third of their real estate investing career. Like, you know, they start off flipping houses, then they go to like the buy and hold, then they sell off all the buy and holds, and they've got a bunch of money, and they're like, what do I do with it? I'll lend it.
This is where operators go to retire.
And you started off there. How did you decide like that was where you're going to start off at?
Yeah, I mean, I would say the honest answer is kind of stumbled into it. I didn't realize at the time I was taking a nice little shortcut there, but that's interesting. I didn't know that's what you guys endeavor to do one day. Maybe there's some other business opportunities we can get together in someday. But so I mean, the history for how I got into it, prior to this job, I was working in investment banking here in Houston, covering oil and gas companies. And my business partner now, Pete Underwood, he had introduced me to what a hard money loan was. Never heard about it before. Pete has a little bit more of an extensive real estate background than I do. You know, investor, similar to you guys, was in wholesaling investing. So he kind of went the traditional route getting into lending. And he's the one that introduced me to the product and kind of showed me the ropes, helped me get into my first hard money loan. And built a little kind of side hustle while I was working in banking. Back in 2020, after COVID, the bank we worked for actually decided to exit the U.S. energy space. We were working for a Canadian bank. So they shut the office down, laid off 100 or so folks, and I wasn't interested in getting back into banking just for a number of reasons. Lifestyle is pretty demanding. Had a couple of young kids, and I just had this other opportunity, this little side hustle at the time, and it just seemed like a golden opportunity to build something. And that's definitely how my personality is. I like going out and building things. I have a couple other little side projects that I work on, and that's just it was something that just fit me and kind of what I was looking for. So, after that, we got laid off. Pete and I ended up kind of coming together and creating Longleaf Lending and the brand. Everything up until then was on the side. There wasn't any dedicated process. There's no team, no website. And so we really started building that company back in 2020. So we're about, 4 years old at this point.
Nice. So how did you know Pete, or how did you meet Pete?
So Pete and I worked together. He was a little bit senior to me at the bank. I worked for him a little bit, but we got to know each other. We just kind of talk real estate a lot. And just one thing turned into another. He had an opportunity on a real estate deal and kind of showed me the ropes on it. So, cool.
That's awesome. Taking the team from the last company and starting a new company.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So, it's a good fit for our background. When you think about the balance sheet and direct lenders, we have I wouldn't say it's a unique model. There's other folks that use it too, but we've been able to go out and this Pete that really figured it out and kind of showed me the ropes and helped me get my first line of credit is a little bit of how we use or how we capitalize some of these deals, I wouldn't say it's financial engineering at all, but it's just an interesting approach that people that hadn't worked in finance might not have thought about how to go out. And rather than just funding, 100% equity deals, we were able to go and partner with other banks here in Texas to bring more capital to the table.
For sure. So it sounds like the background in banking definitely helped you go and secure some of those lines and kind of get started with getting your credit lines with the banks.
Yeah, absolutely. It was certainly helpful, just working in finance and understanding how to underwrite deals too is also another skill. Obviously, totally different types of deals, single family houses versus, oil and gas deals. But, the core concepts, I think, are still the same. And, it's built into kind of our mindset of how we approach the business.
It's just different number sizes,
a little bit different.
Hundreds of millions of dollars for the oil and gas deals and, a couple hundred thousand for houses.
Yeah, not in Canadian dollars.
No. I'm still a little grumpy at the Canadians, so I'm a sore spot.
That's right. We don't need them down here anyways.
Yeah, but so the first deal, the very first deal I did, I think it was probably a $200,000 deal down in Galveston, it's a beach house. And figured out how to I actually used a home equity line of credit for that. So I tapped into that liquidity.
Put up your house as collateral.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend this to anybody. And I don't touch that anymore. But hey, sometimes you got to take risks, and that was a way to kind of get in the game. And so that was my first deal.
I can imagine how that conversation with your wife went. Like, babe, hear me out.
We're gonna leverage the house and lend out the money.
Lever up, baby.
Yeah.
No, but it worked out, right? So took that risk. Got to learn the industry, learn the business. We're obviously a lot bigger now. We fund several deals a month. I think it's been a little bit of a roller coaster the last year or two. We get real busy certain months, and then the next month be kind of quiet, as you guys have probably experienced a little bit as well. But, we're doing probably about 3 to 4 million a month right now. So a lot bigger, a lot more volume than where we were. And it's still just the two of us. Our own balance sheet, and so we've got a lot of opportunities to continue to grow, and that's kind of what we're trying to figure out right now, which path we want to take to get there.
For sure. What markets are y'all primarily lending in?
Just for sake of being here in Houston, we end up doing a lot of Houston deals. I'd say second most is up in Dallas. We have a loan officer up in Dallas now, and we also do a bit out in San Antonio. Haven't done much in Austin recently. It's probably a good thing just because where valuations have gone. We could never get the numbers to work up there. We'd see as a market that could have some opportunity in the future. And we'll, because Pete and I control the underwriting, you know, we don't have a bunch of restrictions. We'll look at deals anywhere. I mean, we look at Austin deals all the time. But yeah, those are probably the three biggest markets. And we ended up doing a bit down in Galveston too. We understand kind of the Airbnb market. We've got some big investors that have been buying up a bunch of houses there over the last few years. And yeah, we're comfortable lending down there as well.
That's awesome. That's great. It's been a tumultuous couple of years for people in our industry. And I'm sure that has impacted you guys in all kinds of different ways. It felt like, I don't know if y'all had the same feeling, it felt like you couldn't not make money 2 or 3 years ago before interest rates went up. And now it's like, kind of like we were talking before the show, I feel like we're fighting every day to be able to make money. Everything just feels a little bit more difficult than it was before.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been an interesting couple of years. I do still think there's a lot of opportunities in the market for investors that are patient, and especially those that can get in at a good basis. I mean, I think that's the most important thing. It's just not overpaying. It's that simple. So for those that have patience, it's a great time to get started. But we're still putting money to work. So even though things have been a little bit up and down, we're still putting capital out there in the market, still backing investors that we've worked with for, you know, many years. I don't know what's going to happen in the future. If I did, I'd be doing something else. But hopefully rates come down a little bit later this year. I think that's kind of what everybody's thinking. And that'll just absolutely help everything, I think, kind of move along a little bit as far as, you know, buyer activity, people interested in selling, that kind of thing.
For sure.
So that first loan you did, that $200,000 Galveston, put it all on the line. I mean, that must have been like proof of concept for you, right? Of like, okay, mm-hmm. Probably nervous the whole time that money's out, itching for it to come back. Payments are coming in. You get the capital back. You're like, this is going to work. This is what I'm going to do.
Yeah. I was like, wow, it worked. And then I decided to not use my home equity line. I ended up getting a regular bank line of credit at that point, just so I wasn't putting, you know, those other important assets at risk. And you know, I think my first line of credit was $500,000, and you supplement that with some of your own equity, and you could fund, you know, $750,000, maybe $1 million in deals. And so I was, you know, had 3 or 4 deals out at any given time, but I was working with I don't know if you guys have talked with Keith on the show, if he's been on, but oh, yeah. Keith was probably, I don't know if you guys were the first ones I lent money to, or if Keith, I think Keith was, but Keith,
no, we introduced you to Keith.
Yeah.
Keith, to you.
Oh, I know. I'm not trying to take credit. Keith Moore, I mean, awesome investor. And, you know, we did just a bunch of deals. It was amazing how fast he would turn them. So even though I only could do a few at any given time, he was just cycling through those. And he's one of the fastest guys out there.
He's a flipper. He turns and flips properties very quickly.
Yeah, he does a great job with them too. That's he doesn't cut corners on quality, and so
his underwriting is he's just a professional. He does good.
Solid guy. You should get him on the show.
I've asked.
You should. He's too busy flipping houses for us.
Ask that guy.
So what? Just from our rounders are very, very curious, right? The financing side. I mean, the money side is it always seems like a distant world, like a different kind of universe, so to speak. What did that look like, going to a bank and getting a credit line? I mean, how is somebody able to do that? What did that conversation even look like? How did you find a bank to convince them to say, hey, you know, give me $500,000 credit line?
It really depends on the bank. There's some people, and it's not even the bank. You got to find the right person at the bank. It's just some people understand the product. Some people have no idea what you're talking about. Some take a little educating before you can get them to the point where they kind of understand how it all works and they can get comfortable. So it's just a lot of conversations, just like I said, trying to teach them what the product is and how, you know, their security is fine, even though, you know, we're doing the lending and, you know, they kind of come in on the backside. So yeah, I think it's the background. You know, I worked in banking, so I was able to put like really, really nice, clean looking PowerPoint presentations together. And I'm sure that helped, you know, put me over the top.
It always comes down to the PowerPoint.
Some of these banks, you know, so, you know, background all came together and helped me get my first line of credit.
if the pitch deck doesn't look good, you're not getting anywhere.
It's all about those transitions.
Clean. No bus on there.
Yeah.
Right, sound effects and everything.
Oh, man, that's funny. Well, okay, so you got started, and then at some point, you were doing this on your own. Some point, you joined forces with Pete.
That's right.
And y'all decided to start doing this thing together.
Right.
Was it because, I mean, what forced that in y'all's world that you're like, hey, maybe we should do this together?
I think it just made a lot of sense because we were already working together. We knew each other. We were doing the same thing. And there's an opportunity just combining, our own personal balance sheets to go out there and get, cheaper capital. You just make a better impression when you go to a bank and there's, two guys that have been doing it for a while, with, our wives are the heroes because they got the W-2s. And it was an easy sell. I think, I can't remember if it was Pete's idea or my idea, but I think we just kind of both around the same time, we're just like, why don't we just do this together? And, really take it from two side hustles and professionalize it. That was the idea. I mean, if one of us was going to build a website and get some process down and get our origination system and servicing platform up and running, might as well share those resources.
For sure.
So, I think it was a pretty straightforward decision. And again, I owe Pete for getting me into the business. And it's a good partnership, good relationship there.
How did y'all decide who was going to take what role in the partnership? Because I feel like that's probably the biggest struggle that people have getting into partnerships is what roles are you going to do and what roles am I going to do?
Yeah, initially I think it was just there's always so much to do when you trying to get something going from the ground up. And I think it was just, the next thing to fall was whoever could grab it would run with it. Those roles I think have certainly evolved, and I don't think they've evolved naturally. I've tended to take a little bit more of the tech and the marketing and like some of the process, and Pete's a little bit more focused on the operations, and to a certain extent, we both underwrite. We both underwrite the deals, and we're focused on growing the team too. So I think we're up to about 10 folks now, and once one of us gets too busy working on something, we start looking for a way to kind of hire somebody to take over that responsibility. So we're not focused on doing the work, and we can focus on kind of growing the business a little bit more.
Yeah.
And that's, that changes every day. And that's always, it's any company goes through growing pains. Like there's always a lot to do and, finding that balance. Sometimes it is hard to delegate too, to give up responsibility for certain things. There's certain things that we will not give up until we get a lot bigger, but to the extent we can, we're always looking for ways to take things away from what I'm doing and what Pete's doing. And, find some talented individual that can do a better job at those activities than we can.
For sure. Absolutely. You gotta figure out a way to replace yourself.
Yeah. And I'm sure you guys deal with the same thing. Your business. How big is y'all's business now? Like as far as team members?
When it comes to stateside, still under 10, but
okay.
Last week we were talking about virtual assistants and everything like that. We've got a pretty extensive, virtual assistant team that's includes marketing, administrative, and niche things. We've got a data guy and an accountant and a couple other functional roles, property management and whatnot.
Yeah.
But I think everybody, I don't know, probably like 20 or so.
20 with everybody. Probably, I think we have 8 here in the States. 8 team members, yeah. Besides us.
Right on.
So, yeah, I think delegating, like you were talking about, that can be the hardest thing. Like,
it's tough.
Oh, it's super tough because nobody's going to do it the way you do it. Nobody's. But if they can just do it 70% of what you can,
You have to do is 30.
Then you have to do 30, and it's good.
Well, and sometimes then you realize that what they are doing is actually better than
a lot of times.
A lot of times.
I should have given this up a long time ago. But yeah, it's always hard giving up control. And just kind of worrying about them not doing as good of a job. But, that's one of the most important things about growing a business is learning to get comfortable with that.
For sure.
So that team of 10 that you've grown to now, what does that look like? I presume you've got some in-office, some complimentary virtual assistants, but are they more marketing? Are they kind of underwriting back office? What are those roles focused on?
Yeah, we've got like two on the back office. Also help with the accounting, because that's pretty integrated with just all the day-to-day that happens and the money that kind of moves in and out and collecting payments. I've got one marketing person that's focused full-time on that. We actually recently just brought on a developer, which is kind of like an evolving role.
A developer for like, are we talking about like application developer or?
Yeah, for like the website and then kind of some of the stuff that we do kind of behind the scenes. I've been running with that. That's one of those things. I started learning to code last year and, you know, rebuilt the website and some of the content management and some of the SEO models and keyword stuff. And it's, you know, it's good, but I know I can hire somebody that can do a lot better than I can at probably a much more efficient kind of price point too. It's probably not the best use of my time to sit there and try and figure out why this code isn't working and, you know, go to ChatGPT and have a bunch of meaningless conversations back and forth
with yourself.
This AI model and doesn't fix it because it's too complex. So, yeah, so that's, we're going to do some fun things there, especially on like the lead gen. And there's a lot of opportunity. I think learning to code, one thing that helps me there was just understanding what's possible, even though like I don't need to be the one actually doing it. So I've got this long list of things that just getting a little experience there has helped me kind of understand and open my eyes, especially like on the SEO stuff, how we can create a bunch of like very useful articles, like with one template and, you know, all of a sudden have like 400 or 500 pages targeting a certain keyword.
Wow.
And, so that was like one of the kind of eye opening things. We've had some success with that recently, but there's other things we could do. So anyway, yeah, we got a developer kind of part-time. If they prove out, we're going to keep them on board full-time. I've got business development guy down in Argentina. He was actually up here the other day for the Argentina soccer game.
Nice.
Quarterfinal match. That was fun. Got to meet him in person and have a good time with him.
He traveled all the way from Argentina to come.
Yeah, we flew him up for the
game. Oh, you flew him up here.
The game.
Oh, I bet you he loved you guys.
Well, it was funny too because he had like the full Texas experience. So he came up, you know, it's hot here in the summer. The game itself was on the 4th of July. So we had like a pool party and he got to kind of see the American like spirit.
The way we celebrate 4th of July.
Yeah, he got to hold a gun for the first time. Like,
there you
never
go.
Actually like seen one in person.
That's awesome.
You know, had like monster thunderstorms like a couple days later and he was like texting me. Like kind of worried. I was like, oh no, you're fine. It's like totally normal. And then he actually didn't get out of town in time for the Hurricane Beryl come through. So he ended up riding out a hurricane, which is like his final test. The power went out.
That's great.
Figure out a way to get back to Miami. So it was awesome. He had a great time. It was good to get him up here. And
he had stories for weeks when he got home.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. I think that rounds out most of the team. And then other than that, it's loan officers. So we've got three, coming up on four LOs here in Texas. So,
and
then myself and Pete.
LO being a loan officer?
I don't do math in public, but I think that might be 10.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Close enough.
Matter.
It's banker's math.
Yeah, what's a decimal here or there?
That's awesome. I love that your guy comes up from Argentina and gets literally a taste of everything.
Yeah, he did.
Texas has to offer.
I could not have planned that any better.
I would say you can't ask for much more either. I mean, other than, did he get to wear boots and a cowboy hat?
Yeah, we dressed him up in boots and a cowboy hat for the Argentina game.
No,
you didn't. When we went to NRG Stadium.
I love that.
That's even better.
It's good times.
That's awesome. Well, he's committed to y'all now.
Man, I hope so.
He's committed now. He's like, this is where I'm.
He's like, they have guns. I'm definitely committed.
That's awesome.
Now, Fur's awesome. I'm sure some of the folks out here if there's anybody that's worked with Longleaf, he actually runs our, he's business development. He helps out with everything, just a little bit of everything. And one thing we're focusing on right now is growing our DSCR loan product.
Which is what?
I mean, yeah. So it's basically it's a rental loan for investors. DSCR stands for debt service coverage ratio. It's a product that's growing. Rates aren't great right now, but rates aren't great with any product right now, but they're usually a little bit wider than mortgage rates. But what it allows investors to do is you don't need to come with a W-2 income, because what they're doing is they're underwriting the property and its ability to cover its own cash flow versus underwriting like your W-2. Like when you go get a mortgage, like they want to see W-2 income and make sure that you
tax as an individual, returns.
Tax returns, all that yeah. stuff. So, you know, and a lot of investors, some of them, you know, some investors, you know, they're probably listening to the show, do this full time. Some do it on the side, but regardless, it is a product that can be helpful because if you don't have like a committed, you know, W-2 job. So we like that product because for one, it's useful right now with folks that thought they were going to, you know, flip properties and now they can't sell them. So we're actually getting some of our folks different exit strategies just by refining them into some type of permanent capital. And, you know, it's just part of the flexibility in the market right now. And, we can grow outside of Texas. Right now, we only do deals in our backyard here with our own balance sheet, but we see more potential to grow nationwide and find investors cheap permanent capital.
Cool. I love it. Well, we're coming up to a break.
Okay.
In the show. What I want to do, though, is on the backside of the show, I would love to hear about how you're getting your clients.
Okay.
And also more about the different products that you're offering them and what you're seeing is working in the market for you guys. It sounds like this DSCR product is really starting to work for y'all, too. So. Love to hear more about it.
Yeah, good deal.
Awesome.
Welcome back, Rounders. Glad you're still with us. This has been an engaging conversation so far. I'm excited that we've got Matt on the show. The money side is always, it can always be the intimidating side when it comes to how do you get involved in real estate? How do you get started in investing? We talk a lot on the show about how to find the deals, what type of things you're looking for. But this is kind of the most important, one of the most important steps and kind of the last step of the process of you got a great deal, you found what you need, but you got to have the right partners to execute it with. And that's what Longleaf is those local partners that can provide that for you.
Yeah. And there, as an investor, you have a ton of choice as far as, you know, who you go to and who can, I mean, there's a lot of people willing to give you money. So yeah, you just got to figure out what's important. We think like the value proposition is we're fast. So we can close faster than most, is we have a pretty simple process, and we're looking for those long-term relationships. You know, we're not just trying to do one and done, and we hope to see the same out of our investors. The other thing too that we've been trying to do a better job of, and we have been recently, is funding draws quickly. So that's important to you. We've got you. We usually try to get those out within 24 hours if we can.
That's extremely important when you're a flipper, especially when you got multiple projects going on. So you're out there spending your own money, putting in new floors or putting on a new roof. You want to make sure that your lender is getting basically replenishing your money so you can keep that project moving forward. Last thing you want is upset contractors.
Literally. Yeah, that's probably,
I don't like getting yelled at either.
Yeah. That's probably, I mean, that's a huge selling point, getting a draw that quick. There's a lot of places, they make it tough. A lot of hard money lenders make it a little tough to get that draw out. So,
yeah, there's a couple things that we do. I mean, we do, for some of our LOs, our loan officers, sometimes they actually will go out and inspect the property themselves, which helps move things along. When we do need an inspection, those are usually ordered the same day and inspected the next, and then it's just a matter of getting the wire out. But we're also using a service now where investors can actually just walk around with their phone and take pictures and kind of validate that the work is done. So it saves the extra step of kind of getting an inspector out there. So those things are helping. And you know, so far the feedback, that's somewhat recent, like the last 6 months, feedback's been pretty positive from investors on using that service.
Yeah.
I mean, flippers are not good at paperwork either. So being able to do something digitally on your phone is a godsend.
Yeah, for sure.
I can imagine. So before we get into like how you guys are getting your customers and some of the back end of your business, like as a lender, I think it's always interesting. And our investors, listeners who listen to the show or watch the show would probably want to know, as a lender, what keeps you up at night? Like what keeps you worried about the business, or what keeps you, what do you worry about?
What do I worry about? I think, you know, we're starting to see a little bit more, I wouldn't say distress out there, but you're starting to see some investors that things aren't going as planned, whether they've run out of money and they can't advance the rehab, or it's done and it's not selling and they're running into kind of these roadblocks. When investors, and it does happen, when investors go dark on us, that's what starts to worry us, because then we got to get more involved and we got to kind of take things into our own hands if possible. So, I mean, advice there, if you're an investor, I mean, just keep the lines of communication open, even if it's bad news. Like the faster you communicate that, like we're not trying to take your property back. I don't want your property. That's not my business.
Literally the last
thing.
That's the last thing I want.
Yeah. So the sooner you communicate bad news and we can work on a plan, I mean, that's what we're here for. We understand the business and we can be pretty creative with some of these solutions. So that's the best thing you do. Just communicate that bad news. It's not a big deal. Like that's part of the industry. That's part of the ups and downs of the market. You know, we'll figure it out. Live to fight another day. So yeah, you know, just every once in a while you get that investor that just stops answering phone, doesn't respond to emails. What's interesting is some of those guys will even, I mean, the ACHs still go through. They'll still pay, but they just will not talk to you and you end up hitting a maturity default. And, you know, we don't know what the status is beyond, you know, what we can see by driving by.
So. And they just pay.
But they're still paying. So, which...
Which that's at least
things could be worse.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's extremely important, right? I mean, you guys, any lender, Longleaf, you know, they don't, like Matt said, they don't want the product. They don't want the house. They want a return of capital and they want to relend the money out. They want to do a next project. So that's important to have your communication lines open because all they want is their money back. And if you're like, hey, it's going to take me another month or 3 months or something, then they want to help you help them get their money back. That's the whole goal.
Wait, let me ask you this. If, you know, let's say a deal goes sideways and would you ever consider, or in what cases would you consider re-lending to that person if a deal goes sideways and I don't know, things aren't working out as well, or maybe they're having to get past their maturity date and they're stuck in this property and they finally get out of it some way, somehow. Like, in what case would you lend them money again?
Yeah, it's happened in the past for sure. I think it tells a lot about somebody's character, how they handle things when, you know, they aren't looking so good. If you're one of those investors that just stops answering the phone, I mean, we're probably not going to lend you money ever again. But if you're willing to work with us and you're, you know, picking up the phone, giving us updates, you've got some ideas, you're listening to our ideas, I mean, that's great. We understand projects can go sideways. But look, again, live to fight another day and just move on and get on to the next deal. So.
And it's important to understand too, like, it's a small world, especially a small market. You know, you borrow money from Matt Longleaf and don't call him back, and then you say, I'm going to go borrow money from somebody else. That lender, you know, if they're properly vetting you, they're going to look and see what deeds you've had out there. They're going to see that Matt lent you money one time, and they're probably going to call Matt. They probably know Matt. They're probably going to call him and be like, hey, you know, this guy's trying to borrow money from me. Why aren't you lending to him anymore? And Matt's not going to throw you under the bus. He's just going to tell him what happened in his experience. So it's a small world. You'd be surprised. Lenders know each other. That industry knows each other. Investors know each other. Lenders know the investors. So you want to keep your reputation clean.
Yeah, no, Andrew's absolutely right. I mean, we do, as other lenders out there, we all talk and we do occasionally have to communicate like bad news about other people. You know, it does get out and it will catch up with you at some point.
For sure. Absolutely. So talk to your lender.
always pick up the phone.
Yeah, pick up the phone. We're nice guys. Save me in your phone. It's cool.
Matt, do not answer. Oh man. Okay. So on the front side, you were talking about how you learned to code last year and got into the SEO world or search engine optimization for your website. It sounds like you guys are picking up clients from your website.
A little bit. SEO is just one of those things. You never know exactly what Google's going to do. If you really want to grow a business, it's probably not the most reliable way because sometimes SEO stuff just takes time. So it's more of a long-term investment. We saw some opportunities for certain keywords that we're going to go after and kind of get on the map for. I think that it probably doesn't drive a ton of business for us right now. I'd say 90% of the deals that we do come in through, you know, for example, sponsoring the roundup, you know, getting out there, getting our loan officers to show up in person and shake hands. I think that's still how the vast majority of business is done in this industry. So SEO, the online stuff's a part of it. Again, I think that's like a long-term investment. you know, there's probably something we could do there on like running ads. If you want to accelerate some of that in the future, we don't run ads right now because I think the best return is still just showing up and
pounding the pavement,
meet new people. I'd say that's 90% of the deals that we're doing. I think the DSCR product, we talked about that a little bit right before the break. I think there it's a little bit more price shopping being done, especially you got people from all over the country looking. They don't really care where the money comes from. It's less important for the permanent capital than it is for somebody who's flipping a house. You want a lender that kind of understands those neighborhoods and is, you know, familiar with the area. So
why is that important?
For lenders to understand the area?
Yeah.
I think it's going to be an easier sell trying to get that deal closed, especially if maybe there's some hair on it. You want, for example, our LOs to be able to stop by and see your work product and get to know you better. It's just we're not some faceless lender from out of state. You know, we can, you know, show up and meet you and, you know, build that relationship. That's why I like it.
For sure. Absolutely. I feel like everybody, you know, with these whole DSCR loans or a lot of loans in general in this industry, even hard money loans, like I feel like there's always these teaser rates that people offer. And then you get to the closing table and you're like, wait a second, you said it was going to be 6% and now it's 12.
Yeah, maybe there is some of that.
I mean, not that big a difference.
Not 6 to 12. I don't know right. What you're talking about. But no, I mean,
Longleaf would never do that.
Yeah, read the fine print on your term sheet, I guess. I don't think on the hard money so much that ever happens. At least we don't retrade people. I think that's, you know, that's a easy way to do one deal with a person. You're never going to hear from them again is by giving them a term sheet and then, you know, getting them to spend money on a appraisal and kind of getting them set into a closing date and then coming back with new terms. Like that's just, you can't do that. That's dishonest in my opinion. And I'm sure it happens, but that's not something we really get involved in at all. On the DSCR thing, I think there's a lot more moving pieces and parts, and sometimes a rate that you do see, it's, you know, it's like a 40% LTV, 850 credit score, you know, in a top tier neighborhood. And, you know, maybe you don't really see that on the rate, but there's a lot of things that go into it. You know, the DSCR part, you know, there can be different points that can buy up and down a rate.
For sure.
Depending on if you increase or decrease. The credit score obviously is a factor in there. You got the DSCR number itself, you know, anywhere from 0.9 to, you know, can go up from there. You know, that can increase and decrease your rate. So it's certainly a lot more complex. Not to get into it any more than that, but there's some, you know, some crazy calculators out there that'll spit out a rate for you.
Did I hear that correctly? You can get a 0.9 DSCR?
There's some people that'll do a 0.9 DSCR, yeah.
That's got to be an expensive loan.
It's not going to be cheap, but you get it done.
for a layman's term, why don't you just explain? I mean, so you said what DSCR is, but what are you... We were talking about 0.9 and whatnot, but why don't you just kind of high level walk through what the ratio means in terms of the DSCR?
Yeah, sure. So debt service coverage ratio at its simplest is you take your revenues. So basically the cash flow that comes in off the property, which is your rental income. So that's your top line. Usually there's some type of kind of like reducer to that. I don't know. Sometimes there's like you take 90% of that number. So multiply that by 90% and then you divide that by your expenses. And there's different ways it's calculated, but the most basic way to think about it is it's your principal, it's your interest, and it's your taxes and your insurance. And so what you're looking for in general is to try and have that be right around 1.0. So your revenues basically matches your expenses, and anything higher than that is great. And you're probably going to get a better rate. And that it signifies that you have a stronger asset that throws off more cash flow than it needs to service its obligations, basically.
Yeah.
So for you know, if you're trying to grow a sustainable rental portfolio, and if you're in this for the long term, obviously the goal is to have a higher than one DSCR. You know, back in the day, a lot of commercial banks, and probably still to this day, commercial banks and whatnot, they're going to require 1.2. Maybe they've relaxed that a little bit, 1.25. But you know, if you want to make sure you're setting yourself up for success, regardless of what rate you get, regardless of, you know, what options there are, you always want to try to stay above 1.1 to 1.2. Puts you in a pretty safe place as an investor to hold that and service that long term. DSCR of one, you know, something could go wrong, and if you don't have the reserves, you might find yourself in a predicament. A 0.9 DSCR sounds a little irresponsible to me, because you're basically saying, okay, I'm going to subsidize this asset on a monthly basis, which, you know, investing on its face is not a good value proposition for yourself. It limits your ability to grow and find new opportunities.
Yeah, that 0.9 should be your kind of note of last resort, if that's the best you can get, if it's a bridge to something in the future.
For sure.
You know, if you can't sell a property and you weren't planning on holding it, then maybe that's a good fit for you. But yeah, I mean, you're not going to be a successful real estate investor if you're just hitting 0.9s.
It's not sustainable.
So. You can only take on so many of those before it ends up bad.
I've got this awesome rental portfolio, but I have to pay $5,000 a month to own it.
But it's appreciating, right?
Yeah,
exactly.
Sure.
Exactly.
Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed.
3% a year, right?
3% a year. Yeah,
that's right.
But that's important. You know, you go to a guy like Matt and Longleaf, and they're going to provide that upfront capital to you to acquire that property, but they're also going to steer you in the right direction to how do you successfully and sustainably exit that capital, turn it to get your next flip, or into what they're talking about, the DSCR long term, so you can hold on to that asset and get you into your next rental property as well. So that's why it's important to work with someone who can do everything turnkey, from the initial lending, the acquisition lending, to the exit financing as well.
I think you mentioned something earlier about working with somebody that's local, that knows the neighborhoods, that knows the area. I think your lenders can keep you out of bad deals too. Because if you send them a deal and they're like, you know, we know that area takes longer to sell. So they might give you that insight of like, hey, you know, we've done deals over in that area before. It might take a little bit longer to sell over there, just because they have the experience, or the loan officer might know that area or know some information because they have other clients doing that area. So
yeah, we're not a, you know, one thing we do is we'll give you a quick yes or a quick no. We don't mind telling you no, and we got no problem telling you if you got an ugly deal. Some people, I don't know, I'm sure there's lenders or other people out there might try and sugarcoat it and or whatnot, but yeah, we'll tell it to your face if we don't like it. So
not gonna give you the money.
Nah.
Big no.
So for a rounder, for a listener who's, you know, got a good deal, or, you know, wants to go get their first hard money loan, or even just, you know, has done multiple hard money loans but wants a great new lender, you know, what are you requiring? What do you need them? What are you looking for in terms of the types of clients, or, you know, how are you vetting the clients outside of just the deal?
Sure. I mean, we do work with first-time investors. We got no problem with that. We don't have minimum experience. If you don't have any experience, we just want to understand kind of what your strategy is. We'll probably dig a little bit deeper into, you know, are you going to be GCing this thing yourself, or are you hiring this out? If you have any similar experience, you know, if you're doing it for the first time, well, it's useful if you do have another job. So if you do have some type of W-2, or, you know, for that matter, just any other type of income, that's definitely helpful. Hopefully you didn't quit your day job to jump into real estate investing full time without any other source of income. So yeah, it's not necessarily about experience. I mean, we just try and get to know you. Usually after, you know, 5-10 minute conversation, you can kind of get a decent sense of somebody's character, and that's important to us. So we'll try and just get a good read on that. Beyond that, I mean, the requirements are, I mean, they're pretty standard as far as what you're going to see anytime you go and ask for a hard money loan from me or from the lender down the street. And we're going to make sure you have some reserves to cover, you know, a couple months of the interest, maybe the first leg of the rehab. A number just depends on the scope of the project and the size of the loan. We don't pull credit for us. If you are planning on like a refi exit strategy, we might, you know, want to do a soft pull just to make sure that we know that you're going to qualify for a refi, because your plan is a refi and you don't have the score, then that's probably not a deal for us, because how do we get our money out otherwise? So yeah, we want to know what your exit strategy is. We'll take a close look at your rehab, just make sure it makes sense. You know, sometimes those things are a little bit light, so we might weigh in on certain areas where we think you're you know, you haven't budgeted enough for the scope. So I don't know, did I cover all of it? It
covers a lot.
Yeah.
Matt just took the hard out of hard money.
Wow.
Easy money.
Wow. Easy money.
Got it. We're going to rebrand the industry.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't particularly like the phrase hard money. I think it kind of has bad connotation or whatever. I mean, some people use private money, private lending. It's all the same. All right. There's really no difference. I think the private lending industry is trying to, it used to be like private money, private lending was like just a rich guy.
Yep.
And yeah. You go to them and they underwrite you and they weren't really going to look at the deal and you could just get, you know, good access to capital that way. That's kind of changed. Now the whole industry has kind of taken over that phrase. Like they have the private lending conferences and that kind of stuff now, because I think they don't like the words hard money, but you know, it's one and the other. It's all the same.
It's funny that people like confuse what hard money is about too, because they hear the word hard money. It has nothing to do with the ease of the money. It's all about the asset. It's a hard asset.
It's a hard asset. It's an asset loan. It's not
exactly
a,
right.
Like you said, you're underwriting character and integrity and kind of the strategy, the game plan, but really what you're financing is the asset, and then you're just betting on the operator could execute. So at the end of the day, yeah, it's hard assets.
Yeah, so. Right. The asset comes first, and then the person, I think, comes second. At the end of the day, we just need to be comfortable with our loan to value, that in case something does go wrong, you know, we can still get our capital back.
For sure. Okay, I've got a fun question for you.
Oh boy.
What has been the most surprising thing to you since you've started this company and got it to where it is today? What are some of the most surprising things that you didn't think that you would encounter or that would be part of owning a lending company, a private lending company?
Most surprising thing.
And as you think about that,
let me think about that.
Yeah, as you think about that, I have a quick story about what's surprising to me. So we buy a lot of properties from individuals who, you know, may or may not be in financial trouble. I'd say a good bit of them. It always leads back to money is low. A lot of the properties that we buy, and one of the interesting things is. A lot of these people use selling their biggest asset in their life as a reset. But, you know, if you follow up or talk to a lot of the people after they do this hard reset in their life by selling the biggest asset that they own, they're back into the same position that they were just, you know, 6 months to 12 months later. And because they didn't have the discipline enough to be able to keep themselves out of that situation. And unfortunately, I hate to say it, but we find a lot of those people back in that situation. Some of them even reach out to us and ask us for, you know, help. And I wish there was a way that I could help out some of those people besides, you know, giving them some financial education. But yeah, it's one of the more surprising things to me is that people will get themselves right back to where they were in a hole, even though they just got rid of their biggest asset and got themselves out of it.
That's a good one. I think one surprising thing for me was that some of the worst borrowers that we've had have actually, try and put this in a nice way. Some of the guys that are, you know, have the most followers on Instagram or Twitter or big personalities. And I think one thing you just gotta be careful of is, like, there's a lot of people that are awesome role models. I mean, a lot of the guys that, you know, the people that you invite to the roundup, you know, people that come on the show, but you got to be careful at believing everything that you see on the internet or on Instagram, because sometimes it's not true. And I know, like, just from experience working with some of these folks, that, you know, they all aren't necessarily everything they make themselves up to be. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot of good examples out there if you're like a new real estate investor. You know, a lot of people to learn from, but find that right group of people. Don't get caught up by some of these folks out there that could be, you know, being dishonest with what their history is and, you know, what they've been doing. So I don't know if that answered your question, but
for sure.
That was one thing that was definitely surprising to me. I was like, oh, it's a no-brainer. We'll do a deal with this guy. Knows what he's doing. You know, we definitely did our own due diligence, but it was still a little surprising how the whole thing ended up.
So. Yeah.
Matt gets to look behind the curtain and see the true balance sheet and the true P&L on a lot of these things. And what he's saying is it's not all chopped up to what they sell it. That's a great point. You know, there is a lot of people out there that it is a lot of razzle dazzle and flash and that sort of thing. We always advocate, we always say on the show, you know, there's a lot of people out there that are have integrity and want to help you. If someone's telling you they want to help you, but their first ask is for you to give them something, that's probably not someone that's going to help you in the long term. It's more of like, let me understand how I can help you versus, oh yeah, let me help you. Here, deposit 10 grand and then I'll help you.
That's a red flag.
For sure.
Mentorship programs, be careful of those.
Those are really...
Sometimes those are red flags. I'm not saying they're all bad, but I've seen enough of them that usually not something you should get yourself into as a first-time investor. And if you do have questions, you know, just talk to somebody that you do trust and find out if it's something that's a good fit for you.
For sure.
So figuring out if it's a good fit for you or not, tell our rounders, tell our listeners, they want to borrow money from you tomorrow. How do they get in touch with you? How do they apply for a loan? How do they get the application started?
Yeah, I mean, you reach out directly. I mean, if you want to hit me on email, matt@longleaflending.com, you just go to longleaflending.com as well. It's got a bunch of information about our loan products. There's a way for you to submit a new loan request there. And there's also a phone number on the website if you prefer to call and talk to a LO or myself. You can talk to me too.
Awesome. Thanks for being here, Matt. Rounders, hope you enjoyed this. Longleaf Lending. Longleaflending.com?
That's it.
Look them up.